Madeline Crispell is the curator of one of my favorite places, not just in Chicago, but on this planet, the Maritime Museum. I know you're going, yeah, where is that again? Where is that again? She is going to make this place really put it on the map. I mean, you haven't been there long. How long have you been there?
Since September, and I'm going to put it on the nautical chart, not the map, Rick.
Well, but you know, whatever. You know me. I'm a city kid. I'm a city kid, Madeline. It is a remarkable place. You've worked before at the Newberry, at Pullman, at Evanston Historical Society. What is it about this place? Trying to just tell the listeners. It's a fascinating part of Chicago history that I sadly have felt for decades is sort of underappreciated. You know, look, you look here, you're looking out the window at the river and the lake. Ladies and gentlemen, the reason the city is here is because of that river and that lake. It's a beautiful building. It's everything.
That's exactly right. You know, I always like to say Chicago history is a maritime history. Just like you said, the city is where it is and what it is because of these two great waterway systems, the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
We've been the crossroads of the country ever since the very first people who lived in this area lived here. And, you know, the trade and travel that was made possible by those waterways grew Chicago into the city it is today.
Did they have to convince you to come down there? How did you? No, I'm serious.
No, not at all. I was thrilled. You know, I love Chicago history. And
where are you from?
I'm from Highland Park, Illinois, originally.
That is because many of you who listen to this show will be pleased to know that Madeline is a longtime childhood friend of the great Zita Moore.
That's right. Two Ravinia Elementary School alums.
Who read commercials better than I do and was a theater critic for this show for a very long time.
That's right.
That's a lovely, lovely.
It's a small world, Chicago, small town.
Do you still see her?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, all the time. Doing well.
Tell her when you came in here that you met a bunch of people who said, you know, you got to get Zita back on.
I will. Everyone convinced me, everyone pulling at my lapels.
You have two big shows coming up. The thing that fascinates me and always has, I understand why the Lady Elgin is not as well known as the poor, sad Eastland, because mm-hmm. the Eastland sank right over there.
Right.
The Lady Elgin story is fascinating to me.
Absolutely. And it intersects with so many other things that are important historically, you know, from Chicago, from back in the 1860s and 50s through today. You know, I like to think that both of these new exhibits are our first sort of entree into more modern material. You know, the Lady Elgin, of course, it's a story about 1860 and the sinking of the ship, but it's also the story of the discovery and the survey in the 80s and the 90s. And so, you know, you get a lot of that historical context, but you're also getting some really interesting modern context about underwater archaeology.
Oh, fascinating. The other exhibit, and we're going to spend, Madeline's going to be here all the way till 7 o'clock.
That's fine.
And we'll even put her mom on to say Happy Mother's Day formally.
Linda's in studio.
She's sitting here. The other exhibit, I knew Bill Pinckney. And I think a lot of people, Bill was a character and a half, but he also was a giant of a navigator. His story, I'm telling you, Madeline, this is another example of someone who was sort of under the radar for his entire life. He was married to a wonderful woman named Ino, the Breakfast Queen of Chicago. But did you know much about Bill until you started working on this exhibition?
You know, I knew some things about him. I, coming from a history background, knew about his work with the Amistad.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know half the number of things there were to know about him. And, you know, unfortunately, I came on board at the museum after Bill's untimely passing.
Yeah.
It's been one of the great pleasures of the job to get to know him through his autobiography, through his children's book, and through the work on this exhibition.
You must also have encountered a lot of people who knew Bill.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, we get people who come into the museum regularly who remember as students their teachers working with him during his solo circumnavigation. They, you know, remember when he was fundraising for the journey. And he is someone who had such an impact on the city of Chicago and continues to. That's a legacy that lives on.
Question. You know, one thing that struck me, and I've been talking about the river and the lake on this show for decades now. I'm so old. But I remember one of the reasons I think that the Maritime Museum needs and should be better known is there was a great folk singer here named Tom Castle, mm-hmm. who sings of the lakes and rivers and
yes.
has for most of his career. And
he's great friend of the museum.
Lovely guy,
yes.
Very passionate fellow. And years ago, he told me that he would go to public schools and he would play for the kids, all ages, all neighborhoods. And that there were some schools when he said, now, how many of you, I'm going to tell a story about the river. How many of you have been and seen the river? And two or three hands would go up in a class of 20.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's horrifying.
Right.
It literally breaks my heart. You can understand why there are certain troubles in various neighborhoods and lack of money and
right.
things like that. You must do school trips.
We do. You know, it's something that is a big priority of the museum. You know, this is history that belongs to the people of Chicago, that belongs to all of our visitors from all over the world who come into the museum. And it's empowering to understand your own history, to understand the history of your city. And yeah, we love to have local school groups. We have summer programs come in. We had a group of youth rowers come through the museum.
Yeah. Well, you're right on the river, too. I want
right.
to talk.
Bubbly Creek.
It's not that. It's not the bubbly creek of infamy.
Not bubbling anymore.
Wow. Tell people where it is. I mean, that building is one of the most, to my mind, the entire building is
astonishing. Oh, yeah. It's very cool. So we are at 35th and Racine, just down the street from Guaranteed Rate Field mm-hmm. from Comiskey, where the Sox play. And we're in the Bridgeport Arts Center, which originally built in the 19-teens to be a warehouse,
yep.
became the Spiegel's catalog warehouse in the 40s. It was that until it closed in the 70s. And then in the 90s, it became the Bridgeport Arts Center, which is what it is today.
It was saved by, I cannot remember his name. Forgive me, nice guy who I've met 100 times.
Paul is his first name.
Yeah.
And he has a last name that we both know.
Yeah, we both know. It'll come to us. We're going to be on for the next 40 minutes. And he was great about it. I mean, he really wanted this to be a vibrant. I mean, a lot of weddings there.
A lot of weddings. My friends who have been to the building, I mean, before I worked there, they've all been to it now to see their favorite museum in the city. But they had been to it for weddings, for the Open Studios program, where the artists have open houses, and you can go in and see what they're working on, which is very cool.
And very fun.
And very fun, yeah.
Even Tony Fitzpatrick is shown there, for goodness sake. Madeline Crispell, you are from Highland Park, so you still, you know, you're friends with Zita Moore. You have a lot of friends here. What is there when you would tell a friend who you maybe haven't seen in a few months or something, I got a new job? And you would say, it's at the Maritime Museum.
Yeah.
I have to assume that many of them would say, huh?
Yeah. Question number one, we have a Maritime Museum always. And, you know, the museum had been on my radar already through Open House Chicago, through
sure.
its architecture.
Oh, right. Of course.
Our space was designed by the great architect Dirk Lohan, a board member. It's a really cool space architecturally. We have really, you know, interesting cases for objects. And so that's why I knew about it already, not from the Chicago history side, which you would expect because of architecture.
Sure. But I think, you know, you're there now at a very good time because Bridgeport is experiencing, to my mind, I'm not even going to call it a renaissance. It's a real rebirth.
You've got
the old Romova Theater opening.
Yes.
You've got the Romova Grill opening. It used to be famous.
A lot of
for
good restaurants.
Chili. You ever go to the Polo Cafe?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We've worked with the Polo Cafe. They've catered an event at the museum.
You give Dave Samber a hug from
me. Will do.
Dave Samber is one of the pioneers in Bridgeport, and he's run the Polo Cafe and the bed and breakfast upstairs, and he turned, you know, that old Lithuanian movie theater into a... You don't live down there, do you?
No, I live up north.
Why?
Because my lease isn't up yet. I'm going to move closer to work this summer.
You think you might move down there?
We'll see where I end up. I don't know. Somewhere on the red line. TBD.
All right. I want to spend some time talking to you, Madeline Crispell, since you're such a good friend of Zita Moore, about what drew you to history. I mean, you've had to my mind, a wonderful, interesting career working at the Newberry for a while, Pullman for a while, Evanston Historical Society. Did you major in history in college, or did it bite you at
I've loved history since I was a little kid. You know, Chicago couldn't be a better place to foster a young person's love of history.
I had a very
kind mom in studio with us today who would take me down to the Field Museum every weekend.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Who would take me to the Art Institute to see the Thorn Rooms, to the Chicago History Museum, to become a hot dog. You know, all of these things that we have in the city for kids to engage with their history. And so part of why I'm so passionate about what we do with youth at the Maritime Museum, because I see another generation of little me's growing up.
How do you think schools, and this is a tough question, how do you think schools in general deal with teaching history? I think in many ways public schools have certain problems, but they're ignoring, I think, the kind of hook that would really interest people, you know, to simply show them a photograph of Bill Pinckney,
right,
would change the view of, I think, some young boy in Englewood, or girl.
Absolutely.
Or girl in Englewood, and say, wait a minute, now this is a black man. He did what?
Right, and that was his stated purpose, was to inspire his grandchildren, but also children everywhere. And yeah, it makes such a difference to be able to encounter that history, to have that taught to you. And, you know, I have nothing but respect for history teachers. I am the product of public school systems, except for 2.5 years when I lived in Shanghai. I went to an international school. But before that, always, you know.
Funny. This is like the international radio show.
I know. I heard your last guest too.
Yeah, then I moved to Japan for 10 years, and then I didn't know how to speak Chinese, so I moved to, China for 10 years.
UN on
the
radio
international
today.
Flair of After Hours with Rick Hogan. Were you – Island Park High School is a great high school.
I started out there. I went there for 1.5 years before my family moved.
And then you went to where?
Concordia International School, Shanghai.
Wow. What took you to Shanghai?
My dad worked for Barbie. Yeah.
Worked for what?
Barbie. The toy? Barbie doll. Yep.
Wow.
He had worked at the American Girl store here when I was growing up. Another reason, you know, great place to expose a kid to history. And, you know, then they moved him to Barbie.
The American Girl store, when it first opened, scared me half to death. And I was buying something for my daughter Fiona and almost got thrown out of there. But just because I was a guy looking around and picking up dolls, and all of a sudden there are 5 people following me.
They're keeping an eye on things.
Yeah, as well they should have. I'm going to spend the rest of this show with Madeline Crispell, the curator. Is that the main title?
That is the title. I am the curator of the Chicago Maritime Museum.
Otherwise, she is president, but they have 2 new exhibits. We're going to talk more about them. And 2 nice books, too. 2 nice books. So please stay tuned on this sunny, warm Mother's Day. Welcome back. Can everybody hear me? You can hear me? Can people hear me? I can't hear myself. Oh, there we go. See, I am a technological caveman. Brett Jackson back there is like looking at me like, oh, Rick. Thank you. I am here with Madeline Crispell, the curator of the Chicago Maritime Museum, talking about the museum itself, which I think is a real Chicago gem. And it's not, the Chicago Maritime Museum does not certainly have the kind of loose money falling on the floor to have full page ads anywhere.
And no, we don't.
And that's one of the things you're up against, I think. It is a kind of struggle for name recognition.
For name recognition, for eyeballs, for people's very valuable free time. You know, if you have 1 weekend, you know, in the week to go to museums, there are only so many museums you can visit. And yeah.
Well, but I mean, there are a lot of museums in Chicago, but also I think the rebirth of Bridgeport is a really good hook for you guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, new restaurants, all sorts of new stuff going on.
Well, and, you know, you think about it ecologically. Yesterday, I spent my morning with some very dedicated volunteers down on that stretch of the creek for Chicago River Day. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, when we think about the way Bridgeport's bouncing back, you know, we're also thinking about the way the waterways in that part of the city have really bounced back. And, you know, the stretch of the creek that the museum is on was Bubbly Creek. And
tell people what you're the historian.
Bubbly Creek. So, you know,
get ready, people. Sit down.
The area of the city where all the stockyards were, naturally, there's going to be some waste from that industry. Where are you going to put that? Not a dumpster, but the body of water that's conveniently right outside your warehouse. And so over time, all of that debris starts to decompose, and that forms gas that bubbles up and bubbled up for a very long time.
Well, and during the worst years of Bubbly Creek, you could, if you were of a mind, you could literally walk across.
Yeah, there was
the river,
so
carcasses
much.
And bones.
You can see an amazing photo in the museum where it looks, you know, just like it was a dump site. It's just a sewage.
Modern American capitalism, the birth of modern American capitalism.
Today, though, there's not a spot in the city where I have seen more waterfowl, migratory birds, turtles. I mean, there is so much wildlife. Kayakers, people in canoes, all the time you see them down on that stretch of the river. It is alive in a very different way.
Do you do anything actively with the river at the Maritime Museum?
We'd like to do more and more.
Sure.
We are on the same floor of the Bridgeport Art Center as Water Riders, which is a kayak rental service. You know, we are very interested in that ecological history as well. And so, you know, for example, we have a big school group coming up soon, and we're going to split them into different groups. And some of them will go through the history with me, and some of them will head outside and learn about the river and the ecology and that climate history, too.
Wow. This is a good job. When one decides to, the museum world, ladies and gentlemen, can be very much like any kind of corporate world out there.
Yeah.
I am sure you've had a few ups and downs in that corporate world but it's also a way for you to explore various institutions and what they provide and what they might provide for you. I think here, and I don't know you well, just being a great friend of Zita Moore's, speaks very, very, very highly of you, but I get the sense that this is a place where you feel you can thrive, where you can express new ideas which is a great thing, and come up with new things to attract more people.
Well, I mean, our mission is so broad. You know, it's Great Lakes history, it's the history of the Mississippi, it's the history of Chicago. You know, there are so many entry points for that. For example, we just took down a temporary exhibit to make way for these two new permanent ones that featured these five unattributed paintings that I have potentially attributed to artist James Bolivar Needham, who has a very interesting history. Parents may have traveled on the Underground Railroad.
Oh,
he was born in Ontario. Ends up as a deckhand on a lumber schooner, makes his way to Chicago, where he works as a painter for the buildings at the World's Columbian Exposition, and then starts doing these beautiful small-scale plein air views of the city. And so, you know, that is an art historical mystery, and that's not necessarily something that someone expects from the Chicago Maritime Museum, but so many entry points for people.
In many ways, I think it's a good thing for you, Madeline, in that people, I don't know if they do know what to expect. I think they think water.
They do think water.
They think water.
Yeah, we've had several people disappointed that the whole U-boat from the Museum of Science and Industry wasn't in our little space. But
where's the submarine?
Wonderful model submarines and U-boats, though. Mm. So,
what is right now, before these two new exhibits about the Lady Elgin and Bill Pinckney open on Friday? We'll tell you more about that opening night party. What's your favorite thing there? Is there something that you almost go up to, in the same way that I used to when I'd go to the, and forgive me, I still call it the Chicago Historical Society, I'd go in, and like many other people, because it was rubbed raw, would go touch the bust of Abraham Lincoln's nose.
Yeah, I always had to go see his deathbed. That was my thing there.
Let me jump on that. Zeta, come on. We're going to jump on his
deathbed. It's fun. Fun for the kids.
I know. I used to love the dioramas there. Is there something like that for you where you get just a...
If I had to pick one thing, and that is difficult now, having been there as long as I have as a curator, to pick one thing, it would be the dive suit from the Eastland disaster.
Oh, wow.
So it's one of those early 20th century lead shoes, the metal helmet, the tiny little window. And, you know, the Eastland disaster is something I did not grow up knowing about.
Sure.
I learned what that was when I went on a tour of a cemetery and saw so many graves in rows that all had the same end date.
Yeah, and I'm sure you have had photographs at the, if you don't have them now, you may have some there now.
Yeah.
Of the Eastland, many of them taken by this amazing, you know, the first Japanese-American photographer in Chicago.
Right, newspapers. Jun Fujita, yes.
Jun Fujita.
There was a wonderful exhibit about him at the Newbery not too long ago, too.
Yeah. And heroic, you know, walked over from the Daily, I guess he was at the Daily News, I don't remember, and took these brave
right.
pictures.
I mean, really striking photos of the immediate aftermath of the people recovering bodies.
It is. It is actually now, Madeline Chris Bell, giving me certain chills even thinking about it. And I think that must happen to many, many people, because it is without doubt one of the most horrific
Absolutely.
Tragedies.
Well, and that it happened right on the river in 20 feet of water, so close to the dock. And
it happened to all of these people for whom it was their one day off, and they were going to have an excursion to Michigan City
right.
and have picnics and have fun. And it's still the one thing that haunts me about it, for better, is... The one person, I'm sure there are a number of people who overslept and didn't make the boat, but George Halas.
That's right.
Would go on to, found the National Football League. And,
right.
You know.
And the incredible thing, you know, I get to give a lot of tours at the museum. I love
do
to
you?
Do that.
Do you? That's great.
You can always register for a curator's tour on our website.
Do they have, are they different? Types of tours that you do, or you choose?
We'll tailor it a little bit. I'll sort of give my spin on things. But, you know, one of the incredible things is I get to meet a lot of the people who come through our door. And the number of people I've met who have a personal connection to the Eastland, someone whose grandmother was on the boat, never walked the same again. You know,
yeah.
So many people in Chicago, which, you know, I was shocked I never learned about it in school.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I didn't get past their great homes on the lake here on Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior. You know, that's as far as my waterway education went, really.
Yeah, Superior. There's a Geno's on Superior. That's your history lesson for today. We got to take another short break, and we'll continue on. I'll have Madeline Chris Bell, if she's up to it. Tell me more about it's a dual opening of a Lady Elgin disaster exhibit and about Bill Pinckney, one of the great, if sort of unsung heroes in the history of Chicago. We'll be back. I have great, great hope after having spent the last half hour or so with Madeline Chris Bell, the curator of the Chicago Maritime Museum. I'm not joking about that. I have great hope for this place. It doesn't really need it, but it does need, I think, and deserves to have a much higher profile in Chicago when you think, you know, go to a museum, okay? You can go to the Historical Society, which is actually the History Museum. You can go to Notabart and see a bunch of butterflies or something. You can go see the submarine at the Museum of Science and Industry. You can go to Pullman. They have some interesting things down there. But this should be on your rotation.
Oh, absolutely.
For your Chicago Museum adventures. I think it's especially good for kids.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite parts of my job is we get some kids in who know more about the watercraft than I do.
That's great.
You know, they're transportation experts from the age of 4 to 10 who flock to the museum and
what kind
they
of,
love
I haven't
the model
been down
ships.
There for a while. What kind of interactive kind of stuff do you have? You must have
yeah,
something.
Yeah, we do. And we
stuff that I would not be able to figure out how to use. But
this new Bill Pinckney exhibit has my new favorite interactive element in the exhibit, which is a huge wall-sized world map with buttons where you can press and it will light up and show you Bill's routes. So you can see the different legs of his trip, when he got where, what ports he stopped at. And it really, it drives home how incredible that voyage was. Those stretches where there's no land, and seeing it in lights makes it so different than reading about it, and or even seeing him in his videos talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I knew Bill, and when he decided to do that, I thought he was nuts. but I knew if anybody could pull it off, it would be him. He was just so determined.
Right. The commitment. You know, he named his his boat after that ideal.
A combination of determination and passion that I think came through. Now, these are, to do two exhibits at once, I think is a fine idea.
Yeah.
I do. What is the layout? What tell me, what would one see when they walk in on Friday night? What, 6 o'clock?
Sure. So, great question. We're opening the two exhibits together. We're going to have one big fun event for both of them. It is free to register. Just there's a donation at the
door.
Listen
to that. Free.
Free. And I will give more details about that, too. It is a program that's coinciding with the Bridgeport Art Center's Open Studios event. So we're co-hosting it.
Oh, wow.
Our actual program is in the Sculpture Garden space on the first floor, which is a very cool space to see if you haven't seen it before. And then you'll come down, either before or after you hear the speakers and you hear Lee Murdoch playing Lost on the Lady Elgin, you'll head down to the museum. You can make your way either chronologically past the canoes and the schooners and the steamships, you know, through the history of Chicago along the waterways, turn back at the creek, and you will find yourself in Bill's story. Then you see Bill, you're in that exhibit, and then you pass into the Lady Elgin exhibition. And so they fit pretty neatly. You know, like I said, these two exhibits bring us into the, you know, towards the end of the 20th century, and of course, both things that have legacies that last till today. And so you're really turning the corner into a more current Chicago maritime history. And
wow,
I am thinking of these, you know, it is the biggest addition to our gallery since we opened in 2016. And it is a great way to reintroduce ourselves to the city of Chicago.
My colleague, Hannah Edgar, will be doing a story in the Tribune about that, these very shows. But you can also go. They have a good website, Chicago Maritime Museum. I'm not going to spell it for you. smart.org. O-R-G.
O-R-G.
O-R-G, I will spell.
That's
I will not
right.
spell maritime. Tell me again, how long have you been there?
Since September.
That's not very long.
I've fit a lot in those months.
I'll bet. What's your board like? Who's on your board? Sailors? Are they industrialists?
Yes, and, you know, it's people from every kind of interpretation of what maritime Chicago means. So we have a history professor. We have people who work in the industry. We have sailors. We have people who are passionate about maritime history or in completely different professions. And, you know, the way that all of us are touched by the river and the lake in different ways, and you see that in our board as well.
That's great. That's great. Do you have to have meetings with them?
Yes. Okay. I get to have meetings
that's
with
no,
them.
That's no fun. That's why I stay out of the business side of this thing. Do you have a bookstore there?
We do. We have a great little gift shop. It has lots of books, Chicago maritime history. For if you get through the museum and, you know, hopefully you have interesting questions that, you know, lead to you wanting to learn more, all kinds of books for you to get. But also, you know, little trinkets and things you might want to take home that remind you of your maritime experience.
Madeline Crispell, tell me a little bit more about these. I'm intrigued by the sort of curatorial tours that you make yourself available for.
Well, yeah.
Is there a general, hi, I am a teacher, I have 10 kids, I want to know the museum. I'm sure there are a lot of introductory to the Maritime Museum stuff.
Right. I mean, I have my regular spiel. So if someone gives me nothing, if they just say, we want to see the museum, I have my regular tour that I'll give, which starts outside the museum, actually, in our hallway, where you can see a map produced after Marquette and Joliet's expedition, the first Western maps to show the area that would become Chicago. And then you come inside and see three great views of the city from 1790, 1868, 1933.
Wow.
And you just see the city grow and evolve and change in every possible way, except for the importance of the waterways, which is constant throughout and to today. So I take you through with that being sort of our theme chronologically. We get back to the creek. That being said, I love when teachers tell me, you know, we're really focused on the 1860s. We're learning about the Civil War. Can you highlight that? Or we just learned about the Great Chicago Fire. Can you feature that? Or a science
class. How did
class.
That fire get over the river? Yeah,
right, exactly.
Like that. Wow.
You know, we have a lot of STEM classes come because they're interested in that environmental history or the technologies that propelled the different ships. So a canoe, a sailboat, and a steamship all are using very different technologies, one of which is ourselves, to propel them. And so that's a way that we get students engaged.
Well, the other thing, too, that you must have, the bridges are, the bridges are one of the most fascinating aspects that people don't really think of. I mean, hell, you can't miss them, but...
Right, you use them every day, so you don't think of them as extraordinary as they are. I'm glad you brought that up, because one of our new acquisitions, we had a donation come out of the blue last year, pretty soon after I started. A gentleman who was a city machinist for Chicago for many years saw the city throwing away this giant wooden gear, and he saved it. On that gear are the metal letters NABR. It was the wood pattern gear for the North Avenue Bridge.
No.
The old bridge. So anytime they had to manufacture a new metal gear, that's what they based it on. We have that now on display. We got it up really quick because it's so cool. You can see that now in the hallway outside the museum.
What an interesting guy to say, you know, what are you, throwing that away? I think I want to have that.
Those are the people who save history. I mean, those are the accidental preservationists out there who see things on the side of the road and think, oh, you know, maybe someone should put that in their car. Those are the people who save history.
Let me ask you, before I let you go back north, Madeline Crispell and Mom, happy Mother's Day. How often does the Maritime Museum have events? Because I'm always a big believer in not the more events the better, but a sort of consistent pattern of events.
Yeah,
is
we
something
are
else
a quality and quantity approach.
Mm-hmm.
The third Friday of every month, as part of the Bridgeport Art Center's Open Studios project, we have a lecture. And those are, again, on any topic related to Great Lakes, Chicago, maritime history.
Fantastic.
Just the ones I've seen, someone from the Navy talking about trying to build a new naval history museum off of Navy Pier. Heard someone talk about the Underground Railroad. I gave a talk myself, an art historical one, on those five mystery paintings.
Oh, those sound fascinating.
And so, you know, we have that every single month. But we also, you know, will have and are starting to have more often special exhibition openings like this.
Before I let you go, tell me about your TV show.
Yeah. Sari Breslin, our education director and I are the new hosts of a show that is so new, we don't have a name for it yet, that will be on CAN TV airing this summer, that'll air every month, and we will bring you an interesting slice of Chicago maritime history.
Wow. How did that happen?
We appeared on a show on CAN TV, and I guess blew the producers away with our knowledge, and they offered us
great.
A show.
Yeah. You must be excited about that.
I am thrilled. My Wayne's World dreams are finally achieved with my public access TV show.
This Friday night, ladies and gentlemen, ChicagoMaritimeMuseum.org, a dual show combining, and I think wisely and intriguingly, the story of the Lady Elgin disaster. Many of you may not know about that. It was a disaster. Quite rival the Eastland, but it's...
the deadliest disaster on open waters of the Great Lakes.
Pretty bad. And the heartwarming and inspiring story of... Bill Pinckney and how he sailed around Chicago.
That's right.
He sailed around the world.
If you've never been to the museum before, this is the best time to come down for the first time on May 17th. Doors open at 6. Program starts at 7. You can register for free on Eventbrite. Follow the link on our website.
Go to Polo Cafe before or after for dinner.
Perfect evening.
Have yourself a lovely time. Madeline, it's great to meet you.
Great to meet you too, Rick.
I'm very excited for you and for the museum.
Thanks very much.
And your mom, happy Mother's Day. All of you moms out there, happy Mother's Day.